After the propaganda triumph at his trial, Hitler set out to write the Bible of National Socialism. He dictated much of the text here in his cell to his faithful follower, Rudolf Hess. On Saturday evenings, the other prisoners sat around as Hitler read out the completed chapters to them. The book as a whole dwells on the great obsessions which had come to dominate Hitler's political thought: the Jews, racism, living space for the German people, the evils of communism and parliamentary democracy. But it also includes Hitler's views on a variety of other topics, ranging from boxing to syphilis.
Mein Kampf will become one of the best-selling books of all time, despite being banned in many countries after the war. In recent years, it has been unbanned and is once again going up in the charts.
The amazing appeal Hitler was later to exercise, but on his mastery of the spoken word. After prison, the leader, or Führer as he now called himself, had a new political strategy. Instead of planning another coup, he aimed to win power at the polls. What was to win him millions of votes was instead his vision of a great national revival. Hitler's election opportunity came with the onset of the Depression. In a few years, one in three of the labor force was out of work. Ilse Wendel was a church social worker during the Depression among the unemployed in the Berlin slums.
The despair was so terrible as I can't describe it. You had everywhere beggars, wherever you went in Berlin, you had beggars.
The democratic political parties offered no solution. To millions of Germans, the only hope was Adolf Hitler.
Have you been to the marketplace? Do you know how much it costs for a loaf of bread these days? 500,000 marks. 500,000 marks! The wheelbarrows aren't big enough to carry the money in! And he's afraid I'll stir things up. You tell Commissar Karr. This is not a time for silence.
I supported Hitler because he, after having seen all that depravity, all that poverty here, was the only one who could do social justice to the people here.
He had that ability, the ability derived from his readiness to throw himself totally open, to appear, as it were, bare and naked before his audience, to tear open his heart and display, to throw on a few extra generators and suddenly become absolutely charged with energy.
It wasn't as though he was using words, it's as though the emotions came direct without words almost. There was a rawness about it, a power.
In uns selbst allein liegt die Zukunft des deutschen Volkes.
6.5 million votes, 107 seats, biggest party in the Reichstag.
Get me Hitler.
Einen Geist, einen Schlossstein, einen Platz.
Nobody has ever had this power to move audiences. Everybody says it the way he says it.
Hitler comes to power, not as he had hoped through outright victory at the polls, but as head of a coalition government. As this withering glance suggests, Hitler despises his coalition partners. He quickly outmaneuvers them and establishes his own dictatorship.
A month after he comes to power, the Reichstag building, the parliament building in Berlin, is set on fire. This happens to come at the time when he is constantly insisting that there is a communist plot to overthrow the new government and just carry out a revolution. And the Reichstag fire goes up in flames, which everybody could see. Before that night was over, he had got a set of decrees drawn up which transform the situation politically. All the guarantees in which people in any democratic state, the freedom of speech and so on, freedom from arrest, all this is swept away.
1933, Berlin, the sin capital of the world. In the 1920s, Berlin was known as the center of sexual perversion, drugs and depravity. Once in power, Hitler ordered the city cleansed of these elements. Obscene books, pornography and communist literature were all burned by the National Socialists. The clampdown will force Jews, promiscuous liberals and gays such as Marlene Dietrich, a known bisexual, to leave for the United States.
A majority of Germans tolerate the burning of books, the banning of other political parties, and the setting up of a police state, because Hitler offers a way out of the depression.
If he's doing things which are not so good, which haven't, then he said, well, you have to take the rough with the smooth. Dictatorship seemed to be the only way to get out of the mess. So I thought that was a good thing that they cut away all this nonsense and rather did something, really did something, and that's what Hitler did.
He eliminated the crushing unemployment that Germany suffered, and he gave millions of people new confidence and indeed welfare. They were doing better, much better.
When Hitler assumed power in 1933, there were 7 million unemployed Germans, the highest per capita unemployment rate in Europe at the time. In only his first year in office, an unprecedented 3,374,000 were helped back to work. Hitler's brilliant and innovative ideas included building motorways the length and breadth of the country, with housing units provided for workers. The workers' families would then eagerly spend the newly earned wages contributing to a fast-growing economy. Priority was given to the health and fitness of the nation, especially the youth. Free healthcare and a generous financial support were provided for expectant mothers. The world's first anti-smoking campaigns are also introduced. In addition, it is now a government policy to protect the environment and wildlife. Crime was virtually eliminated, with city streets made safe to walk again. Workers, subsidized by the government, would take holidays abroad. Hitler is the first in Europe to introduce the 40-hour work week, with extra pay for overtime. Factories are now required to provide workers with restrooms and a cafeteria. The NSDAP leadership looked upon the charging of interest on loans as immoral, and by forcing banks to abolish the practice of usury, millions were freed from the slavery of debt. It was a spectacular financial recovery not witnessed before or since, often referred to as a miracle. Meanwhile, most Western countries were marred by migration. The Nuremberg Rallies, the annual celebration of National Socialism.
They came in their tens of thousands, full of youthful idealism, to worship the Führer in the awesome surroundings of the Nuremberg Stadium. Among the worshippers in the Hitler Youth was Alfons Heck, now a writer on the Nazi period.
The decisive turning point in my life occurred at the age of 10. From that moment on, I would remain beholden to Adolf Hitler long until after our defeat. I was one of 82,000 members of the Hitler Youth lined up in the Zeppelinsfeld. I stood in the first row. And when Hitler began to speak, we were just tingling with nervousness, finally to see our God. When he appeared on the podium, I was afraid to look at my neighbor because I didn't want him to see the tears in my eyes. My knees were shaking. And Hitler beamed down on us. He calmed us down by lifting his hands, both hands, several times. When he began to speak, it was in a very conversational tone. Man to boy, father to son.
Und ich weiß, das kann nicht anders sein. Denn ihr seid Fleisch. Von unserem Fleisch und Blut, von und im euren jungen Gehirn brennt derselbe Geist, der uns beherrscht.
And he said how fortunate we were to live in this new age. And he said, from now on, you no longer have to fear any class distinction. You're all one. But the essence and the emphasis occurred in the final sentences. He leaned over the podium, and I know he looked straight into my eyes, and he said, you, my boys, the young of Germany, live in a fortunate time. Because you are the standard bearers of the movement. You will inherit what we have so far created. And from that moment on, without any doubt, I was bound to Adolf Hitler, long after our defeat.
For uns liegt Deutschland, in uns marschiert Deutschland, und hinter uns kommt Deutschland!
The mid-1930s were the halcyon years of Hitler's Germany. Germany was at peace, her prosperity restored, her national pride recovered. To those prepared to ignore or justify the police state, it seemed a beautiful Germany. A host of distinguished foreign visitors, many with impeccable democratic credentials, came to call on the Führer at his mountain retreat, the Berghof. Among them was the former British Prime Minister, David Lloyd George. With LG was his secretary, Albert Sylvester.
Hitler ran down the flight of stairs to welcome LG as he got out of his car, shook hands with him most warmly, and conducted us into the inside of the Berghof. This massive room, the only light of which came from a massive window, which was terrific. I've never seen such a window. Lloyd George said, you have done great things for Germany. You have restored her honor, and you have gained for her equal rights.